to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. It is a steamy Tuesday in Waukesha. We're here, and we have a big announcement that it actually started on Friday, but things are a little crazy when you're kind of starting things up and have a lot of moving pieces. But I officially have a standalone, stable, everyday producer, sidekick, friend. We originally met at WTMJ, and now she's here. Jane Matinair, Danger Lady Jane, producer, Southeast Wisconsin radio veteran, and newly christened Danger Lady, which is what we need to get that name tag for you to wear around the office.
Absolutely.
This is your third day on the board?
This is my third day on the board. I haven't broken anything yet.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling discombobulated, just a little bit. And I want to thank Connor and Brian and everybody who has been so helpful. But this is a new skill set for me.
I know. And I'm so proud of you for being like, I can take this on. I can learn a new skill.
I haven't started crying yet or anything.
No, at least not in front of us. I don't know what you do at home.
That's where the sobbing happens.
Well, I am so excited to build the show with you. I'm so excited you're on board.
I am so delighted to be here and so just excited about this whole venture.
Me too.
Yeah.
We have a lot to do,
yep.
A lot to build.
Yep.
And I'm excited to do it with you.
Well, I'm so thank you for bringing me on board, my friend.
Yeah. We need more ladies in radio. So.
There's no question about that.
All right. Well, she is on the board today. Feel free to chime in when you got something to add to the conversation. But for now, I want to introduce my guest today, who is in studio, not on Zoom. Well, he is on Zoom, but he's also sitting directly across from me in person. He is a connector. He's been described as an executive powerhouse with the empathy of a great friend and the passion and competitiveness of a star athlete. He's a corporate executive in the insurance and financial services field by day and a serial entrepreneur and international business advisor by night. He's the guy you absolutely want on your team, in your community, and in your circle. My friend, Philip Morris is here.
Thank you so much, Kristen. And thank you, Jane. I love sharing the space with you here today because we've got some legendary things with you. So I'm excited. This is going to be great.
So that's quite the introduction, but I feel like in a word, how do you describe what you do and who you are?
You know, I connect people, you know, people, thoughts and, you know, ideas. You know, at the end of the day, I said my job and my corporate job is in sales and business development. But I tell people, I said, I do a lot more than that. I said, it's really connecting people to what their need is. And so it doesn't matter if it's in my day job, if it's after hours, if it's in the community, if it's connecting, you know, nonprofits to resources. It's really about finding where I can be the best servant leader to connect A to Z and everything in between.
That's a good job description. And it's good that you also get paid to do that because I would love to get paid just to connect people because I'm also very social, but I get paid to talk into a microphone now. So that's not bad either.
No, not at all. I get paid to an extent to connect people, but as the day job says, I said, it's about bringing dollars in and driving revenue. But I tell people, I said, I have not paid to sell anything. I've never sold anything in my life. I said, it's a matter of creating those connections and building relationships. And when you do that from an authentic place, it becomes very easy. It's be in the right place, in the right space, and have opportunities and options for people. And it's not my job to push anything on anybody. It's they'll tell me what their need is, no matter what the realm or the medium is or whatever it is their goals or outcomes they're looking for. If I don't have it, I'm the first person to say, hey, you know what? Do you know this person? And pass that baton on to the person that really can service them.
Absolutely. So we're going to get more into what you do and your background and how you came to Wisconsin, because you're not a Wisconsin native, but you have adopted it as your home. But we'll get to that later in this hour. Wanted to start... because you are a father of three, you're actually married to someone I went to high school with, mm-hmm. which we only figured out after the fact, after we had already met. Shout out to Lindsay and Madison West. So you have three kids, I have no kids. And as a parent right now, you are in the group of people who is having to make a decision over the access of having the vaccine for kids who are under between 6 months and 5 years old. Mm-hmm. Since last month, when it finally got approved and available, this was July 1st, so it's been, you know, more than 2 weeks. But in Wisconsin, there was 4,200 children under the age of five as of July 1st in Wisconsin that had gotten the initial dose, which makes up only a little over 1% of children under five in the state. The percentage is a little higher if you take out babies under 6 months who still aren't approved for it. But this is not unique to Wisconsin. According, I found an article this morning on Politico that across the country, there is low demand for young kids, and they're in getting the COVID vaccine. And, you know, and I'm not a parent, so I'm not in that position yet. So how are you feeling, or what is kind of the decision making that goes into something like this?
Let me tell you, it is a mechanism there that is, it's a challenge. I said, you know, so my kids are 7.5, 4.5, and I'll say almost 5, and then one soon to be 2. And so what happens is if you're, especially if you're whether you're a single parent or a two-parent household, it becomes down to convenience, unfortunately. And I think a lot of the things here are people are going to set some of the things to the side. I can't disrupt my day, and I can't disrupt my ability to make a living, to go to work, to change these things, whether you're remote or not. And if your kids go to a daycare or preschool or go to the YMCA, especially during the school year, there become a lot of things that are challenges for the schools, the teachers, the support staff that are there. So people make decisions based on, oh my gosh, like right now we have, you know, our youngest goes to a preschool that's private, and everybody's facing a shortage of resources and labor. And so when you have, you know, one or two or 5 or 10 of your teaching staff or these child educators that go down and can't be there, you know, you try to find any kind of resolution you can to help the community, help your base for keeping your sanity in your house. Because I'll tell you what, I work in financial and services and in insurance. My wife works in tech and big data, also in the same industry. But try to work from two people that are remote and work at home and bring your kids back home with you. That's a nightmare on its own. That makes enough. I think it increases the revenue at the local bars because parents have to have an outlet to run someplace to say, oh my God, how can I get away? And so I think some of those things come down to, am I personally ready to go and do that? I'm basically at a disadvantage because my oldest, because of all the things that were going on last year and when they finally released the vaccine for the kids that were 5 and older or 6 and older, he has gotten the vaccine. And I can't tell you if it's been good or bad. He still got COVID after the fact, you know, a few months later. He's still been exposed to other kids. Were his symptoms and all the other things there? But when you look at your younger kids especially, I'm glad to be that guinea pig, but we have to think about, you know, what do we know? You know, give me solid data. And I've got enough friends in the science community, in the research, and, you know, that work in healthcare that'll give me these things. But as a parent, you always want to know, how much is enough? Is 51% good enough? Is 75% good enough? Nothing's 100%, but can I get closer to beyond, you know, 80-20? Can you tell me that this is going to be 80%+ effective, and we're going to have these things, and we're not going to have the side effects? Because I think that's the other piece, is we've got a long time before we know what actually has occurred to us currently and to the people that are in older generations, as well as to kids that are going to be younger. What's the long-term and long-tailed effect to those things? And I know that everything has side effects. We hear all of our host of what can go wrong, you know, from this, that, and the other, from every medication and things we see out there. But we want to make sure we're not creating something that's going to be detrimental to, you know, a large portion of our population. You know, we start thinking about people and the people that are in the workforce, and then people that are coming of age, that are the high schoolers coming into adulthood. And then this younger generation, these, as you said, the 6 months to 5 years, where is that going to put them? What are they going to be the long-term effects to them down the line?
Yeah, and I mean, that is... I always think about something like birth control, right? Like, it was such a miracle creation at one point of being able to take a pill and not get pregnant. But there's also a lot of effects of birth control. And so a lot of these things are trade-offs, and we don't, as science is, it's true until it's not true.
That's right.
Right. It's good until it's more research is done, and there's constantly more research being done on almost anything. I mean, this is a side tangent. I saw some CNN article, like headline this weekend, that said something along the lines of, study shows that no amount of alcohol is good for you under the age of 40. And I was just like, well, crap, because I'm still under 40 and definitely drink more than that is. Yes. And so, but it's like the science finds, study finds. And so, but it's still that trade-off as a parent, right? That it is the risk, either the risk of the unknowing of what vaccines and side effects could be versus the risk of how bad COVID could be if your kid gets it. And so, especially now that we're moving into, and it feels like it's not even making the same blip on our radar, but this new variant, I've made it 2.5 weeks basically of this show, and this is the first time we're talking about COVID, which I think also says something. Mm-hmm. But it's the new variant, BA.5. I don't know why, and I still don't understand how the decision making process for how these things get named. I'm sure there's an actual rhyme or reason to it, but I don't know. And it's like 4 times more resistant to the vaccine. It's stupidly contagious. Like as of this week, cases are like 130,000 a day. There's more deaths again. And it doesn't feel like it's making that much news anymore. And so that in comparison to the original question of now children under five can get the vaccine. And so as a parent, knowing that it's coming back, knowing that it's mutated, knowing that it's more contagious, but also knowing that, well, like, does the vaccine even do anything? Like, well, how does that change your decision-making process?
Again, I think it comes back to convenience. You have to look at where you're at. I said, you know, there are parts of our city, and I'm the first one to say, you know, COVID is real. I said, you know, I didn't suffer any effects of it, but I've had numerous people that are close to me. I had, you know, several relatives, both older and younger, that were down and out. I have coworkers and members of my team in my corporate job where 3 of the family members went in at the same time, only 2 came out. And I said, so it can be devastating. And I understand that the different, you know, where you fall on the spectrum of what your age is and all these other things. But when you talk about the kids, you don't have kids yet, Kristen, but I will tell you, kids are grody and they're disgusting. They lick doorknobs. They do weird things. You know, they don't keep their hands off each other. When we first had our first child and went to the preschool and the daycare, the first thing I said is, oh my God, get these kids away from me. I don't even want my own at this point because they're covered in snot. They're leaking and they're dripping and they're touching everything. They're touching each other. So how are you going to stop the spread of anything, COVID or anything at this point, vaccine or not? Our bodies are a lot more smart. Our physiological, you know, nature, just who we are, the science behind just human anatomy. It's pretty amazing to me. You know, I'm no scientist, but the things that our body can do, our immune systems and the things that are there, I feel like there's some things there that we need to rely on and say you have to have the ability to, you know, get better. Yeah. Really, that's it. It's, you know, do what you can to solve the problem, but medicine's not always going to do it in that case, in my opinion.
All right. Well, we got to go to a break really quickly. This is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry and my guest co-host for the day, Philip Morris.